Mooney Radio's Spring Share event has officially ended, but we could still use your help. Will you partner with us in our mission to be bold for the gospel in 2023? To see our impact or partner with us, visit springshare.org.
If you've already filed your 2022 taxes, maybe you weren't happy with the results. Maybe too much or too little was withheld from your paycheck. Hi, I'm Rob West. The solution is to fill out a new W-4 form with your employer. Now, a lot of folks would rather have a cavity filled, but the process is easier than you think. I'll take you through it today, and then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance Live, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, as followers of Christ, we are to pay what we fairly owe in taxes. Jesus himself said in Matthew 22:21, "Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." So we must pay our taxes, but we also don't want to overpay. That means having enough withheld from your paycheck to avoid getting hit with a penalty. It also means not having too much withheld. Both are forms of overpayment. The W-4 form determines how much the IRS will withhold from your paycheck and will affect the amount of your refund, if any. Ideally, you want to come close to having only what you'll owe in taxes withheld. You don't want a big refund because that's essentially an interest-free loan to Uncle Sam. And as I said, it's a type of overpayment because you're denied use of that money. And again, if too little is withheld, well, you'll pay a penalty. Now, when filling out the form, you'll need to account for all jobs for you and your spouse if you're married, plus any additional income, credits, and deductions available to you. By the way, you can download a blank W-4 form at irs.gov. Now, here's how you fill out the form. Step 1, enter your personal information, including name, address, social security number, and tax filing status. You can choose from single, married filing separately, married filing jointly, qualifying widow, or head of household. You can actually stop after this and let your employer fill out the rest with default levels, but that probably won't give you as accurate a result as you'll get by filling in the rest. Step 2 is to list all of your income for you and your spouse, including self-employment. Here you have 3 options. You can use an online estimator. There's one available at irs.gov and many other places. This works best if you have income from self-employment because it allows for those taxes, both halves of FICA, in addition to income taxes. Or you can use the worksheet attached to the W-4 form. This or the estimator are often preferred if you have multiple jobs and you'd rather not give your employer information about the other income. Or you can just check the box to have your employer withhold at the default rate. That seems easy, but it may result in too much taken out of your checks and a big refund check. Again, you don't want that. So you probably want to go with the online estimator or the worksheet to get the best results. Remember, the whole idea is to maximize your paycheck amount while still covering your tax liability for the year. Now, step 3, you want to claim your children and other dependents. Make sure that only one spouse claims child-related tax credits on the W-4, and those credits should be claimed by the spouse with the greater income. Otherwise, too little will be withheld. After you complete this step, your employer should know exactly how much to decrease your withholding to allow for your children, other dependents, and any other tax credits. Now, for step 4, here you list any other items that will affect your withholding, such as income apart from your job that you expect to receive that won't have withholding. Listing this will increase your withholding. Also, deductions other than the standard deduction that you expect to claim, these would lower your withholding. And finally, extra withholding. You can specify how much extra you'd like withheld for any reason, but again, don't go overboard. Now, just as with child tax credits in step 4, only one spouse should claim additional income and deductions. And last, step 5, you've done the hard part. Now all you have to do is sign and date your new W-4 form and hand it in to your employer. So those are the steps to filling out your new W-4 form. We hope it gets you very close to hitting the nail on the head with your withholding for 2023. Again, a reminder, the reason you don't want that big check, I want it in your monthly budget so you can attach a name to it and get it where you need it to go so that you can have margin to save for your goals that align with your values and your priorities. All right, we're going to take your calls next. The number to call is 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. I'm Rob West, and this is Faith and Finance Live. We'll be right back after this. Stay with us. Thankful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West, your host. All right, we're taking your calls and questions now on anything financial. The number to call is 800-525-7000. We've already got some great questions lined up, but room for a few more or a testimony if you'd like to share something with us today about God's faithfulness in your financial life. 800-525-7000. Let's head to Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Shay. Thanks for being on the program today. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I am reaching out to find out. I have a newborn. Well, he's 8 months old. And I was trying to figure out what is the best way to start in, like, a bank account, a saving for him, as well as I'm paying a mortgage on my condo. And I want to know what is the best way for me to leave that property to him in the event of my passing. In case I pass and he's a minor, how does that work?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very good. So a couple of great questions. I love that you're planning in advance. And by the way, congratulations on that new 1 month old. What a blessing from the Lord. A couple of things first related to that savings account. I think the first question you have to decide is control. Do you want to save in an account that you would have control over when it becomes his asset? In a custodial account, it becomes his asset at the age of majority, regardless of his spiritual and financial maturity and ability to handle these funds. In an account you control, you would decide when that becomes his asset. And then secondly, I would ask whether you want to earmark this specifically for retirement, college, not retirement, college, or if you want it more widely available. So give me your thoughts on those two.
I definitely want to be in control of it because I don't. Typically, children are not ready at 18.
Yes,
so
I agree.
I definitely want to make sure that he is ready spiritually and more mature in order to take that over, as well as and I want it to be widely available. So if he wants to utilize it for college, or if he's, you know, at 25 and he wants to purchase the home, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, very good. Okay, so in that case, then I would open an account in your name or in the name of you and your husband, so you would control that and you could decide to gift it to him at any point down the road, whether he's still a minor or beyond age 18. And I would do it in just a brokerage account, probably at Fidelity or Charles Schwab. Are you comfortable investing this money, given that the time horizon is likely more than 10 years?
Yeah, so low to moderate.
Yeah. So what I would do is probably look at one of two options. You could head to soundmindinvesting.org, and our friends at SMI could help you with some mutual fund suggestions. You would be able to open the account, again, in your name or jointly held with any of the major brokerage firms like Fidelity or Schwab, and then they would give you mutual fund recommendations that are high quality that could just grow over a long period of time, and you could set up an automatic transfer of whatever amount into that account every month so you could build it over time systematically. The other approach is what's called a robo-advisor. This is just more of an automated approach to investing that uses an algorithm, and it's very low cost. And every time you make a deposit, it reinvests the amount you're depositing into some broad market, what are called indexes. So you would capture the big, broad moves of the stock and bond market over time. And, you know, that can be a very efficient and cost-effective way to invest. And by investing every month, you're doing what's called dollar cost averaging, which just means whether the market's down or the market's up, you're just systematically investing in at different points in the market's trends And over time, it's a great way to build wealth or to grow a portfolio for a specific purpose like saving for a child. So a good example of that would be what's called the Schwab Intelligent Portfolios. You would answer a series of questions. They would build a portfolio that's very low cost, and then you would automatically reinvest it every time you made a deposit. Another more kind of modern approach to that is something in what's called the fintech space, and it'd be a smartphone application that you'd find in your app store called Betterment. So whether it's Betterment or the Schwab Intelligent Portfolios, I think that would do what you're looking for. And based on the way that you answer the questions about your risk tolerance, your time horizon, your goals and objectives, you could dial that portfolio down to be as conservative as you want it to be. But the good news is it's not sitting there in savings where even though it might get a little bit of interest, you're barely, if at all, going to outpace inflation, and therefore you're really not growing it. Whereas if you invest it, you at least have the potential over a long time horizon to see this money grow in addition to the contributions that you make. With regard to your house, the best way to handle that is through just a basic will. Now, that would make sure that it's passed to your heirs at your death. And the benefit is there's what's called a step up in basis, which just means when the inheritance is received, the new cost basis for the home is not what you paid for it, but it's the new higher value as of the date of death. And the benefit there is that if it's sold, then there's no capital gains tax essentially on that inheritance because they're selling it for the same thing the cost basis is because that was stepped up. Now, you mentioned the ability to pass that to him even if he's still a minor and something were to happen to you, and you'd probably want to talk to an estate planning attorney about a trust. What would happen is you'd create a trust, a living trust, it'd probably be somewhere around $1,500 to $2,000, and then you'd retitle the house in the name of the trust. The benefit of that is you would have the ability, even if you passed away prior to your son reaching adulthood, or if you were incapacitated, you would have a trustee named that would handle the distribution of your estate and this home. And it would happen according to your wishes. So you could put certain provisions in the trust documents that say, for instance, you know, he's not to receive it until a certain age, or he's to receive it over time, you know, throughout his life or something like that, to make sure that he's provided for beyond your life. So I would say the next steps for you are to determine how much you want to put away in this account for him, set up an account at Charles Schwab or Fidelity and use either Betterment or the Schwab Intelligent Portfolios or soundmindinvesting.org. And then make an appointment with an estate attorney to make sure you update your will, which you want to do anytime you have a major life event change, like having a child, and then ask about a living trust, specifically for your house and other assets. Does that make sense?
That is wonderful information. Thank you so much.
Okay, very good. Well, listen, congrats again, Shay, on this new little one in your home. I know that's it's an exciting time there. We appreciate your call today very much. You know, folks, we've got a lot of ground still to cover today. We've got two lines open. The number to call is 800-525-7000. We'll be going to Indiana and Florida for Carol and Norma, plus perhaps your question. But let's take a quick email before we head to our first break today. This one comes into us at AskRob@faithfi.com. And we hear from, let's see, Wanda. She writes, when I give to some ministries, I've received free gifts in the past. Now, the retail price of those gifts is taken out of my donation. Well, I don't need the gifts and don't want that money deducted from my donation. What do I do? And what I would say, Wanda, is that it's wonderful that you don't necessarily want to be compensated in any way, including with a gift for your giving. So first thing I would do is ask the ministry not to send you the gift. Oftentimes when you make a gift, they will have right there, for instance, if it's an online form where you check a box that you either want it or you don't want it, I would obviously indicate you don't want it, and then you'll get the full amount of the deduction. Or you could call the ministry and say, listen, I want to go ahead and give this gift, but I'd like for you not to send the gift back in exchange, and they should be able to honor that. So I would just communicate with the ministry and make sure that they honor those wishes. Thanks for writing to us. We're going to take a quick break. Back with much more on Faith and Finance Live. Stay with us. Thankful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West, your host. You know, we started today by talking about the W-4, how you can fill out that form to ensure that you're not having any extra withheld from your paycheck, resulting in a higher refund than you should receive. And here's why. We don't want that windfall. We want that money in your check so you can allocate it according to your values and your goals and priorities. But if you are thinking about your taxes, and perhaps this is a season where you're dreading that tax bill every year. Well, one way to think about our taxes, I think biblically, is first of all, that taxes are symptomatic of income, God's provision. So therefore, and this might come as a surprise to you, we can pay our taxes with gratitude because again, they're symptomatic or evidence of, you might say, God's provision in your life. And of course, in exchange for that, we receive benefits. Now, we may disagree on how the government uses our money. We may feel that some of it's wasted, or maybe even some is used in contradiction to our values. But what we can be assured of is that it's God-ordained, that we've been told in the scriptures to honor the authority God has ordained in Luke 20 and Romans 13. So perhaps we ought to shift our thinking and think about not paying any more than we owe by any means, but with what we owe, paying it with thanksgiving to the Lord and thanking Him for His gracious provision in our lives. Think about that today. Hey, let's head back to the phones. We've got two lines open, 800-525-7000. Speaking of W-4s, Crystal, I understand you have a question there in Hammond, Indiana. Go right ahead.
Hi. My daughter just turned 18 December last year. And as far as putting her as a dependent on my W-4, for what am I still allowed to do that? And also, my whole life I've always claimed zero, which I am now learning is the wrong thing to do. But what all can I claim? Do I claim one for myself? Do I also claim one for my daughter? And so on.
Yes. Well, a couple of thoughts. Number one, just specifically related to your daughter, you can claim your 18-year-old child as a dependent if she's lived with you for more than 6 months and you provide more than half of her support. And if the answer to that is yes, then absolutely you can do that. With regard to how you would approach the W-4, you really just need to follow the instructions on the form. It's going to ask you to list all of your income, including self-employment. There's an online estimator at irs.gov that you can use, or on the W-4 itself, there's actually a worksheet. But in addition to listing your income on that worksheet from all combined sources, you'll want to claim your children and other dependents, including that 18-year-old daughter, if the answer to those items that I just mentioned were yes. And then any items affecting your withholding, so income apart from your job that you expect to receive that won't have any withholding, things like that. Also any deductions other than the standard deduction that you expect to claim. So it will all be laid out there for you. And at the end, when you sign and date that and turn it in to your employer, that will give them all the information they need to know how much to withhold so we can get as close to zero as possible, with certainly without you owing anything, but without you getting a big refund check back.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Can I squeeze in
one more question?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Okay, I live in Indiana, but I work in Illinois. Now, my employer says that since Indiana is not a reciprocal state of Illinois, they don't have an agreement that they're not obligated to withhold my taxes, that I have to figure that out for myself. Is that true? How do I go about doing that?
Yeah. You can make those estimated payments. I think the key is that you know exactly what you should be withholding to cover those state taxes at the appropriate level. This is where a CPA is going to be really helpful to you, Crystal, to be able to help you do some tax planning, given this unusual situation where that is not automatically withheld, given the difference in the resident state versus the state you're working in, to make sure that you're doing that on your own to do that withholding. paying and making those estimated payments so you don't have any penalties or interest. And certainly you don't want that to catch you by surprise at the end of the year. So if you previously haven't used a CPA, I think this is certainly the time to do it, to go ahead and do some planning to make sure you're covering 2022, but then also moving forward, you know the appropriate amount to withhold in the future. So I would reach out to a godly CPA. If you don't have one, you could contact a certified Kingdom advisor and ask for a referral. You'll find a CKA on our site at faithfi.com. That's faithfi.com. Just click find a CKA. Thanks for your call today. God bless you. To Florida. Hi, Norma. How can I help you?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because I have grandchildren that I would like. I have an IRA and I was going to put them on there, but I called the company and they told me they would advise me to go to a different banks because they would only be getting 1% from them if something would happen to me or my husband. Right now, I'm going to put my husband on because I didn't even realize he wasn't on. So I have the form. So I wanted to put my other grandchildren just in case, you know, he passes. So what's your advice? I have one more quick question after.
Sure.
That,
well, with regard to the IRA, you certainly want to maintain up-to-date beneficiaries. And so if your husband's not currently listed, you'd want to make that change immediately. You could list your grandchildren in whatever breakdown you want as contingent beneficiaries if something were to happen to you and your husband. With regard to you saving for them, if you wanted to put some additional money aside for college, I would use what's called a 529 education savings plan. It's just a basic account based on the tax code that allows you to put in money. It's after-tax dollars that go in, but it grows tax-free so long as you use it for qualified educational expenses. You could open one for each child and put in basically as little or as much as you want and let that grow between now and college. To learn more about that, go to a website called savingforcollege.com. It'll help you figure out which 529 is the best one for you, and then go ahead and get those beneficiaries updated. Thanks for your call. We'll be right back. Grateful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West. Let's go back to the phones. We've got all the lines full with some great questions coming up. To Florida we go. Treva, you're next on the program. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. My mother just recently passed away. She had her home and her house paid for, or her car. So, of course, it has to go to probate because it wasn't in my sister's or my name. Mm-hmm. But my question is, once that all sells, what's the best way to use the money that we get? I have a car payment. I don't know, should I pay the car off, even though it's not a problem to make my car payment?
Yeah,
or
yeah, very good.
That money sit in the bank? Because my husband and I are old. I'll be 60 and 62. You know, you want to have some cash.
Yeah, but, sure. You said your age is 60, is that right?
I'll be 61 this month, yes.
Okay. And so are you and he working, or one of you?
I work full-time, and he has his own business, but
okay, great.
He'll probably be retiring soon.
Well, I'm so sorry to hear about your mom's passing. How much do you think you'll receive when the estate's settled?
I'm thinking close to at least $60,000. It's split three ways, so her home should be, well, at least $150,000 plus the car's worth $15,000. And she just had a small insurance policy.
Yeah. So you'll receive about $60,000. Let me just kind of run through a few questions about your financial situation. Do you all have what I call an emergency fund of maybe 3 to 6 months worth of expenses and savings?
Yes, I have about $9,000 in savings.
Okay. What do you all spend on a monthly basis, roughly?
I only spend maybe $1,500 because I think I clear close to $2,000. I live pretty modestly here in Florida.
Okay. But do you and your husband kind of separate the bills, or is that everything?
Yes. He draws his Social Security, so that covers our house payment. So really all I have is my car and my regular, you know, electric, water, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And I
all
don't
right.
have
okay.
much in the
So you of. Feel like 9,000 is enough for your emergency reserves. Beyond that, do you all feel like you're on track in terms of retirement savings? You know, when you both fully retire, other than your Social Security, do you have enough in the way of assets to supplement that?
I don't think so, unless we were to sell our house. Because okay. my husband always owned his business, so he never had a retirement plan.
Okay. Very good. And so does the business have value? Would it be sold when he's retiring?
He's actually a horse trainer, so not really.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no problem. So that would be one option, is for you all to try to put as much of this away into retirement accounts as possible. I do also like the idea of paying off the car. So that would be one option. How much is left on the balance of that car note?
About $26,000. Okay. I just got it.
Okay. Yeah. So you could wipe that out. That would obviously free up more on a monthly basis that you could plow back into additional savings. If you want to do any giving on this, you could do that. And then the balance, perhaps you'd fund Roth IRAs. That would be retirement accounts individually. And you could put in, over the age of 50, $7,500 this year. And so you could put in $7,500 for each of you, or a total of $15,000 between the two of you. And before you file your 2022 return, you could actually go ahead and fund last year's at $7,000 apiece. So you could put in $14,000 for 2022, and then you could turn around and put in another $15,000 for 2023. So between the two of that, that would get you, you know, about all of this money allocated, because you'd have $29,000 going into Roth IRAs that you could then invest and grow for the future. So you'd begin to build a little bit of a nest egg that would supplement Social Security, in addition to now having your car paid off, which gives you more margin on a monthly basis. How does that sound?
It sounds good. Other than we've already submitted our taxes, because my husband's business, we have to file by the 15th of March. So I've already submitted.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so you could put at least $15,000 into 2023 Roth IRAs, and that would get a good bit going there. And then you could either put the rest of that in savings, or as a sole proprietor, essentially, you could open what's called a SEP IRA, S-E-P IRA. And that would allow you to put in a good bit more, up to 25% of his compensation, or north of $50,000. And that would give you a current year deduction on the amount going in, and then it could be invested and grow for the future. So those could be great options as well. I think you guys, if you've never spent any time with an advisor doing some planning, I think that might be helpful for you as well, just to look at all of this in light of a financial plan, both looking at retirement, what are your income needs going to be down the road, what about your insurance, your estate plan and wealth transfer plans, as well as kind of how to deploy this additional money you're going to be receiving. And if you're interested in connecting with an advisor, I'd reach out to a certified Kingdom advisor there in Florida. You can find a CKA on our website at faithfi.com. Just click find a CKA. But apart from that, I think a SEP IRA or two Roth IRAs would be great options in addition to paying off the car.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Treva. Glad you called today. God bless you. 800-525-7000 to Huntington, Indiana. Hey, Ed, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
My question is, okay, my wife and I've been saving for longer than her. I've been saving for retirement since I have been working full time when I was about 20. And after my wife and I married, I helped her set hers up, and she's been saving a 401k as well.
Okay.
Over the years, because of the recession and different things, we've changed jobs. I currently have two separate 401ks because I did not roll the one over into the other, and my wife has three. And we are still currently working, although she is only a couple of years away from retiring. She's a little older than I am. And I was looking at combining her two into a local institution retirement plan so that I just want to make it easier for her to be able to go in and talk to somebody about when, if something should happen to me.
Sure.
Where she can go in and say, hey, I need to raise how much I'm getting out of my retirement plan or
right.
or something like that. And at the same time, then I was going to roll the one that I am no longer contributing to into a plan at the same
yes,
place
sir.
So that she could have access to that. And the reason I'm saying this is because my dad's side of the family is notorious for not having a long lifespan.
Yeah.
And
let me weigh in on this because I've got to hit a break here in just a second. I totally agree. I think rolling this into two IRAs, so reducing the number of overall accounts, will simplify things. The key is to find that trusted advisor. If you've got somebody locally, great. If not, you could find a certified Kingdom advisor, two or three to interview on our website at faithfi.com. Just click find a CKA. You could do some planning, build a relationship that she could continue if you pass away before her, but also have that one IRA for each of you that is the recipient of these rollovers to get things a lot more simplified and invested together. We'll be right back on Faith and Finance Live. Stay with us. Grateful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live, where we recognize God owns it all and we're stewards, and money's a tool to accomplish God's purposes. And when we make pursuing the kingdom our aim, well, money is not an end, it's a means to an end. And we apply biblical principles in our daily financial decisions as we work out our finances, but really we're working out our faith because we're making a daily demonstration of what's most important to us and where we placed our trust. And ultimately, that's how we should view our finances. Back to the phones to St. Louis. Hey, Doug, thanks for your patience. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you so much. Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Hey, I have a question about, I have some insurance settlements coming, and I am on disability. Can you tell me, or do you have any really good information on how I should proceed with these insurance settlements versus my disability? If it's not enough to offset the disability totally, I'll probably live longer than that.
Okay.
But it's certainly going to have some implications. I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Yeah. In terms of what specifically are you trying to solve for here?
Well, I understand insurance settlements or tax, not tax deductible.
That's great. It's not taxable. If it's a personal injury claim, it would not be taxable at the federal or state level.
Okay, so would that have any implication on disability at all? And I'm not going to have to file tax returns that I've got now all of a sudden a bunch of money, and now I'm going to be disqualified from disability.
Yeah, no, there shouldn't be. I mean, if you still qualify as being disabled and unable to work, I don't see any reason there. You could certainly check with a CPA just to be sure in your specific situation, but I'm not hearing anything that would cause any problems there.
Gotcha. And a CPA should be able to cover any kind of investments or suggestions on what to do proceeding.
Yeah, I think, well, for that, you would want an investment advisor, somebody who could really take a look at your overall financial picture and help you build an investment strategy to deploy this money in a way that makes sense for you and your goals and objectives. If you don't have an advisor, you could find a certified Kingdom advisor there in St. Louis on our website at faithfi.com. Just click find a CKA. I think this is a great opportunity for you, Doug, to seek some wise counsel, both on the tax side as well as the investing side, just so you've got somebody walking alongside you to help you make some really wise decisions. So hope you're okay at the end of the day. And I'm sorry to hear that you're going through this, but I appreciate your desire to be a faithful steward of these resources. And I think getting some competent counsel could really help you. Appreciate your call today, sir. To Cleveland. Hi, Kathy. How can we help you?
Hi. Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have three retirement accounts. One that I started when I found out my employer didn't have a Roth option. And then a second one that's my normal 401k that now does have a Roth option. So I've stopped contributing to the first one, and I'm just mostly going through my 401k. And then the third is an annuity that I rolled over from previous employers. So the total of all three of them is around $282,000. And when I talked to the financial advisor with Fidelity that does my 401k, I thought I could roll over that the Roth that I set up, and I found out I can't. So after meeting with him, I just all of a sudden thought the amount that's sitting there is about what I owe my house. So I owe about $27,000. There's $32,000 sitting there. I'm looking at retiring in 4 to 6 years. And so I was kind of excited to think I'm just going to cash that in since I'm over 40 or 59 and pay off my house. And when I called the financial advisor, he's advising me, oh, you don't want to do that. He said, you don't come into lump sums of money like that too often, so you should let it grow since you're only paying 4% or 4.25% on your mortgage.
Yeah. And so you said, how much is the balance in all of these combined?
The total combined right now is 282.
Right.
And the one, so I have a 32 that's in this account I'm talking about, 180 in my Fidelity, and 36 in Prudential, that's the annuity. But the 36 is actually going to jump to 100,000 once I don't touch it for 20 years. There's some kind of little note in there that says if you don't touch this account for 20 years, it quadruples. So
okay, so the 32,000 is a Roth IRA?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So you could pull that out. It wouldn't be taxable. And you said your balance on your mortgage is only 29?
27, yes.
27. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I could go either way on this. I mean, obviously the point of these investments is for them to grow. And the Roth is a great option just because you've got that money in there growing tax-free, which is a huge benefit in the sense that, you know, even once you retire, you still have, if you're in good health, a decades long need for this money to last. So this would be a part of your overall investable assets that could help to offset your income needs in retirement beyond what Social Security will cover, which was never intended to cover more than 40%. So I think what your advisor is saying is, man, as much as I hear you that you'd like to be debt-free, I'd love to keep these assets growing and compounding for you, especially while the market's down right now, letting this recover and moving to higher ground. And then you just make a goal out of your current cash flow to get that mortgage paid off by the time you retire. And if you do that, now you're entering retirement debt-free, which keeps your lifestyle as low as possible, but you're maximizing your investable assets, so you've got more to draw from down the road. So that's the financial case for it. What that's not counting, though, Kathy, is just the peace of mind of you knowing that you've paid off your home and that it's free and clear. And if you feel like you have a leading from the Lord or a conviction to be debt-free, or that would just give you a greater peace of mind, I don't have any problem with that. I mean, it's tax-free money. You've already paid the tax on it. As you said, you're not going to pay a penalty. And although you're only paying, you know, 4% or so on it, I think the non-financial benefit of you being unencumbered and knowing that you're completely debt-free and now you've got this extra money now on a monthly basis that you could give away or sock into savings, I think that's a great idea. So again, I could, and I know I'm sounding like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, but I think at the end of the day, you could do either one. From purely a financial standpoint, it'd probably be better to leave that money in the Roth and just let it grow and just keep paying that mortgage as much as you can and get it paid off by the retirement. But if you feel like you'd rather have your home free and clear, I'd say go for it and don't look back. Does that make sense?
It does, and you're almost repeating word for word what the advisor said. So that gives me kind of confirmation. And I am paying extra toward my mortgage, so I'm on track to have it paid off in 4 years. So
okay.
So there's not really a concern there. There was just that one moment that I thought I could do this. And
yeah.
And one thing the advisor said is you could do it next year too. You know, anytime
yeah,
you want to,
right.
You could do it, so I don't have to rush into it.
Exactly. And if you waited till next year, you're probably going to let this, you know, $32,000 recover to maybe $35,000 or $36,000, or maybe higher than that, you know, as the market recovers. And then again, you could, you know, come in and wipe it out at that point. So I think that's good counsel. I just want to leave room for the Lord to lead you to do something that he wants you to do or that you feel compelled to do around paying off debt. And if that was the case, I wouldn't want to stand in the way of that by any means.
Absolutely. All right. Yeah. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
All right, Kathy. Thanks for your call today. Let's finish in Florida. Hey, Tom, what can I do for you, sir?
I'm one of many that have damaged their home from the from hurricanes or various storms and so forth. My question is surely I would guess that the insurance settlement would not be added to income for tax purposes.
That's correct. Your insurance settlement isn't taxable because it only replaces what you lost. However, it could be partially taxable if you've already claimed the cost of the damage as a deduction on your tax return. In that case, part of the settlement could be considered taxable, so I would check with the CPA. But if not, it would not be taxable because, again, it's replacing what you've lost, and so it's really not income in that sense. Does that make sense?
Yes, but my question is that there's a difference between the settlement and the actual repairs, and a lot of times the insurance settlement no way covers the cost of the repairs. Is there any recourse
right.
in that?
That's going to be between you and your insurance company, and so that would be something I would take up with them. Obviously, Florida is in a really tough situation with regard to the state of the insurance environment, and so you're going to have to go back to your insurance company, and hopefully through documentation, you can help them to get to a number that's actually going to cover the cost of the repairs. We appreciate your call today. Quickly to Trent in Indiana. Trent, I understand your father-in-law bought some I-bonds, and you're wondering about an additional $5,000 through a tax refund. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, real quick, I'm calling on behalf of my father-in-law and mother-in-law. I helped them set up their accounts to get the $10,000 electronic version. To my understanding, is there an ability to get the $5,000 paper version? And if so, my research shows that you would have to do that through your tax return.
You're exactly right. That's
correct.
The only way you can do it. So to buy the paper I-bonds with a tax refund, you'd use the IRS form 8888 when you file. So just have them check with their CPA, or if you do their return, you could do it for them. And you'd specify the number of bonds you want to buy and the denominations up to $5,000. So that allows you to buy an additional $5,000 beyond the $10,000 you can normally buy in electronic bonds, but it's only available through a tax refund. So you're exactly right, and it'd be a great option for them if that's what they're looking at doing. Hey, thanks for checking with us today, sir. That's going to do it for us today, folks. So thankful to have you along with us. I'm grateful for my team today, Tahira, Amy, and Jim. Faith and Finance Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and FaithFi. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Come back and see us tomorrow. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Moody Radio's Spring Share event has officially ended, but we could still use your help. Will you partner with us in our mission to be bold for the gospel in 2023? To see our impact or partner with us, visit springshare.org.